All right. It is December 12th, 19 or 2020. I want to say 20. It's December 2020. And I'm Michael L. Jones with the Metro Housing Coalition's Unfair Housing Project. And I am interviewing Emma Lucille Allen, who is was the first African-American chemist at Brown-Forman. And she is also a noted artist. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you? Glad to see you.
Yeah, you too. This has been a long day.
I know. Okay.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, when were you born?
I was born in 1931.
And where'd you grow up?
I grew up in two parts of Louisville. I stayed with my grandmother a lot, and she lived in Smoketown. But my original home is 1724 West Chestnut. And I was there, and my mother died there in 1966. Mm-hmm. So that was yeah.
So what was, so you grew up in Russell.
Yes.
What was it like then?
Well, all you saw, in other words, when in those days, all you saw were African-Americans and Jews, because Jews ran all the grocery stores. And every now and then I would go and pay my mother's rent uptown, and I would catch the bus, and then I would go to see a white person. But you really didn't see white folks in during those times.
Mm-hmm. Was it like that in Smoketown too, when you went to see your grandmother?
Yeah, well, my grandmother lived one block north south of Broadway, which was Finza Street. Mm-hmm. And so that whole from Finza over was African American. And on the other side of Broadway, it was primarily white. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So was there any kind of tension? What was your relationship with the white people that you would encounter?
Well, other than speaking to them, you didn't have any relationships with them.
Uh-huh. So, and where did you start school?
I went to school at Western Elementary School, which was at 17th and Magazine. Uh-huh. And it's now called Perry Elementary, I think, now. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was your family life like then?
Well, we lived in my mother rented her house, and that house is now burnt down. It was a three-story brick house, and she rented, and in those days, people rented rooms. So we lived on the first floor, and my mother had rented rooms to men on the second and third floor. So we weren't allowed to go on the second and third floor. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you about your name, because Elmer is a unique name for a woman. How did that come about?
Well, my father was named Elmer, and I was the firstborn. And then I have a brother that's named Elmer. And then I have a nephew that's named Elmer. So there are four Elmers in the family.
Okay. What was your father's full name?
Elmer Johnson Hammond Sr.
And your mother?
Ophelia Helen Gwynn Hammonds.
And what was your brother's name, since he was Elmer too?
Well, he was Elmer Johnson Jr. And my nephew was Elmer Johnson Jr. Hammonds the third.
So how did you tell each other apart when people were calling Elmer?
Well, we didn't use our first names. In other words, we called my brother Bud, and they called me Sil. They left. Not Lucille, but Sil, C-I-L-E.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what was Russell like back then, as far as what you did for entertainment, what your parents were doing?
Well, my father was a Pullman porter. And then when he was laid off from being a Pullman porter, he was a taxi cab driver for the Empire Taxi Company. Between 6th and 7th on Warner Street then. Mm. And my mother was a maid and a cook, you know. Mm. And so, you know, that was what they did for a living.
Being a Pullman porter, that was considered to be a good job back in those days, wasn't it?
It was a good job, but it wasn't a 7-day a week job. know, they would call him into work. So like I said, and when he wasn't working there, he was driving a taxi cab.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you said your mother worked as a maid. Was that common of the women in your neighborhood?
Well, the neighborhoods at that time consisted of all types of people. And my next door neighbor in 1722 was a man named Mr. Calvary, I think, and he was a carpenter. Also, there was a policeman that lived on that square, and Miss Eunice Singleton, who's eventually married Atwood Wilson, she lived on there. So it was a mixed neighborhood, you know, because all African Americans lived in the same neighborhood, lived in that area. Mm-hmm. And across the street from me is West Chestnut Street Baptist Church. And I remember when that church was being built. Let me charge my, put my battery on. I'll be right back.
Okay. So you were telling me about the church across the street from your house. Oh, okay.
Well, the men that built that church, some of them stayed at rented rooms from my mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was just a different, and I didn't realize at that time that how important it was to own homes, because we never owned a home, because we always rented at that, and we rented from this real estate agent was called Sticker, I think it was Sticker Realtor Company, and that that was who she rented from.
Well, I mentioned that you lived in what we now call the Russell neighborhood. Was it called Russell when you lived there?
Oh, Lord, no. It wasn't called Russell then. It was just, it didn't even have a name. We just, you know, it was just called the West End, you know, because all the teachers lived, most African, the area really ran from 9th to 28th Street. That was all African American. And then there were a few people like Dr. Hammonds, he lived on the west side of 28th and Chestnut, because then it became River Park. Later on, it became River Park.
Mm-hmm.
But it was primarily, you know, just all, and everybody, all the teachers, it's like in that neighborhood, Mr. Lewis Brown, who taught it at Madison, and Madison changed his name eventually to Russell, but it was Madison Street. It was Madison Junior High when I went. Yeah.
And so what kind of things would you, with your family or the kids, do for entertainment?
We stayed in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the evenings, we would take a bath and sit on the front porch. We had a screen, had a swing, and you would sit on the front porch and talk to people. And we more or less stayed in your own neighborhood. We didn't go outside that neighborhood at all. I never went to Little Africa. And then we would go to Chickasaw Park, which was the only park which African Americans could go to at that time. And we didn't have a car. So you had to catch, you know, public transportation then was streetcars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you rode the streetcar, you had to sit in the back of the streetcar.
Did you have theaters?
Were three African American theaters, but that was at on Warner Street.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the Grand and the Lyric, which were across the street from each other. And then you had the Palace, which was at 13th Street. And I remember G.C. Cox. And what is so funny about G.C. Cox is that I bought the house that my grandson lives in, the house that G.C. Cox lived in, who was an artist. And he was a manager at the Grand Theater. And you don't really realize how life, you know, how life changes as you go along. And so he was, you know, and I did not realize who he was until later on in life as I got older and then, you know, became an artist. And so, and the neighborhood that I live in now, I live in what you call Algonquin Gardens. And that house, which is where Mr. Cox lived, built, was 4407. And I own that house, and my grandson lives in that house now.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about G.C. Cox?
Well, G.C. Cox is one of the first African-American artists, you know, in the city. And he graduated from University of Louisville. And he and Sam Gillum, and I forget the other person's name, but they were one of the first one of the few first African Americans who graduated from the University of Louisville. Mm-hmm. And so he was just a well-known artist, and he was a painter, you know, and also I think he worked as a graphic artist at Fort Knox, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you get into art yourself?
Well, I didn't get involved. Well, other words, sometimes you don't realize what art is. Mm-hmm. You know, you take sewing is an art form, but you don't call it an art. And it's like, and when I went to school, I took my first sewing class at Madison, and my first outfit that I ever, first thing I ever made was a slip, and I made a scallop around the edges of it, and it was all hand stitching. And nowadays, young people aren't taught that in school. But at that time, I say the things that I learned that I do now, I learned in African American schools. Because I went all the way through all at Black schools until I was a third year in college. So all my training, everything that I got from my teachers, because my parents did not have a college, did not finish high school. So all I had, so teachers and your neighbors, they were the ones that influenced me. And your churches. I went to Plymouth Congregation Church and Plymouth Selman House. And that's where I would go and take crafts. So you do a lot of things. Now, when you look back, you don't realize what you have when you're little, you know, and what you don't have.
What was the Settlement House like?
Well, the Settlement House, which has recently been sold by the Plymouth Congregation Church, it was just a meeting place. And they taught, they had all kinds of crafts. You might need to research Plymouth Settlement House, who actually started that. But, you know, and you had all types of crafts, cooking and everything was there. And it was a part of what I did, you know, because I only lived a block from there. It was 1628 and I lived 1724. Mm-hmm.
So you talked about your parents not having an education. Was that something that they emphasized in you?
No, that was something. No, they didn't emphasize it. That was something you had to do. You know, you had to go to school. And my brother and sister, they didn't even finish high school. So I had it was something although I'm still a learner, I'm a lifelong learner. And I just like the education environment.
So what was your sister's name?
Her name was Mary Lisbon Hammonds, and she died. She's dead, and my brother is just died this year.
So where are you in the children?
I'm the oldest.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was 89 on August the 23rd.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes.
So what high school did you go to?
There was only two high schools, Catholic High and Central High. And I went to Central, and it was at the old Central, which was between 8th and 9th on Chestnut Street. Mm-hmm. Do you have any pictures of that building there?
I think I've seen pictures of it.
Oh, okay. And across the street from there was a famous photographer, Arthur Evans. His studio was across, and my father eventually divorced my mother and remarried, and that was part of that family. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he married into that family?
Yeah, he married. Yeah.
Okay. And so what was Central like then?
Oh, Central was wonderful. We had Edward Wilson was the president, was the principal, and Maude Brown Porter was the assistant principal. And like I said, all the students were Black and all the teachers were Black.
Mm-hmm.
African-Americans or Negroes, whatever you call them at that time.
Yeah, so what year did you graduate from Central?
1949. Yeah.
And so, what were some of the subjects they taught?
Well, when you sit down and think about, I took college credit courses. So I took French, I took Latin and French, I took my first Latin class in the 9th grade at Madison. And then I took a year of French. I took 3 years of Latin and 1 year of French. English, Lima T. Johnson was there, and so and he took civics, took music, and I look at myself now, I could not have talked to you in 1949 like I do now, because I studied all the way through high school, and I was a second honor student, and in order for me to say my speech, I had to go to Mrs. Kirkendall's class every afternoon and say one sentence at a time. And then I would come home and talk to a mirror. So I tell everybody, if you have a child that stutters, make him talk to a mirror, because that's how I learn. Unless I'm really getting excited and nervous, I don't stutter.
Mm-hmm. And so is that something that you had dealt with all your life?
12 years, all through high school, up until I graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And graduation was at Memorial Auditorium. And you know, and like I say, and you would just, every time you would say something, I said. And, you know, it's embarrassing to you when you can't talk.
You talked about how in your neighborhood, all the store owners were Jewish.
Tell you somebody else that lived in my neighborhood, Lyman T. Johnson. Uh-huh. Not Lyman T. Johnson, but let me get it right now. The first African American librarian who opened in Louisville was Western Library.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Thomas Blue.
Okay. Thomas Blue. Yeah.
Well, he had two sons, Charles and Thomas, and they played the piano, at all hours of the night. And at times you would get up and wonder what is going on, and it was them playing. Because they played the piano and they played the organ and all that. And but anyway, he was the first head librarian of Western Library. Mm-hmm. And now I am president of the Western Branch Library Support Association. And it's just funny how things mix. But on the northwest corner of 18th and Chestnut was Heller's Drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
And on the southwest corner was Fine's Grocery Store.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 16th and Chestnut was Garden's Food Store. And they were all run by Jews.
And what was the relationship like between the Jewish owners and the
citizens? I was a babysitter for the Hellers. And I would, I babysit Clarice. You don't think about because you don't have to remember who people were. And I babysat for her, and I would take her to dance classes on Saturday, and then I would take her to Shawnee Park. I don't like Shawnee Park today, because when I was babysitting, they did not want me to go to the bathroom.
Mm.
So, you know, because the parks were segregated, because the only park that African Americans could go to was Chickasaw Park. But people forget that there was also Shepherd Park, which was at 17th and Magazine. And there was a swimming pool there in that park. And my brother was a lifeguard there. And also, when you think about what's on Chestnut Street, during those times, back in those days, there were only a lot of Black film homes. You had all Black doctors, all Black dentists. So they all lived within walking distance, or you know, either on Chestnut or on Warner Street. And there was a funeral home across from the Plymouth Settlement House, was called the Mumford Funeral Home. So you passed, and everything, you walked everywhere you went, because you didn't have money to pay for to ride the streetcars.
So did you know the Blue family well?
I saw them every day. I live 1724. They live 1723.
Okay.
So their mother would walk up and down the neighborhood. I can't think of her name. And she would crochet all the time. She'd be walking. But you knew all your neighbors. I don't remember them by names now, except a few of them. But you saw them every day. Mm-hmm. And on Sunday, and Wednesday, we would get dressed on Sunday, take a bath. And you would sit on your front porch. And so I knew everybody who went to Plymouth Congregation Church. everybody went to West Chesapeake Baptist Church, and everybody went to Asbury. If they were going east on Chester, they, you know, so you saw and you spoke to them. We sit on the front porch and waved at everybody, speak to everybody. And I still speak to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So did you stay in that? Did your mom stay in that house on Chestnut after your parents got divorced?
Oh, yes. My mother stayed there. I was born there, and my mother and she died in the same house, 1724. Mm-hmm. We only had one house. That was that house and my grandmother's house, where I stayed at 611 East Spencer.
So what you do after you went to, after you graduated from Central?
Well, you know, in those days, when you had to go to African-American schools because, mm-hmm. because there was a day law that stated that blacks and whites, if you lived within a certain area, you could not go to a white school. So look up the day law. And so I went
to I'm familiar with it.
You're familiar with it. Okay. So I went to Municipal College for the first 2 years. And they had an all black staff. And Dr. Parrish was there and a whole lot of people. I forget all their names now. But he was when they closed in 1951, he was the only one that went to the University of Louisville on mm-hmm. campus. He was the only one that went there. But mainly they was all survey courses and just plain, you know, in other words, they were preparing you. But when they closed, I couldn't afford to go to U of L. So I went to Nazareth College, and that's where I graduated from in 1953.
And that's Spalding now?
Yeah, that's Spalding now. But at that time, Nazareth was an all-girls school. It was a Catholic school and all girls. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I don't know what year that they allowed men on campus, but it's now, you know, but it was all, there was only two lay teachers on staff, but everybody else was a nun.
Yeah, you had mentioned earlier that there was a Catholic high school for yeah. African Americans too. Yeah.
Well, that was on 8th Street. That was on 8th Street on the north side of Muhammad, on north side of Warner Street.
So were there, was there a black Catholic population that these schools were mainly serving or?
I don't know how that went. I can't speak to that because it was St. Augustine Church, which I eventually joined in 1951. But before this, and my mother was Catholic. And my grandmother was Catholic. My grandmother went to St. Peter Claver, which is on Lambton Street between Hancock and Jackson, and then St. Augustine is where it is now, still at 13th and Broadway, and I guess that's where they were. And then that's where the students came from, but I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. So. When you went to Nazareth, is that when you got into chemistry?
Well, let me tell you, how did I get into chemistry? Well, I got into chemistry mainly because when I left Louisville Municipal College, all I had were survey courses, and survey of chemistry, math, and all that stuff. So when I went to my auditional, you had to take 12 hours of philosophy and 12 hours of religion. And so the rest of my courses that I took, not knowing what I took chemistry and math. And so when I graduated 2 years later, majority of my courses were in chemistry and math. So that's what I got. So I got a degree in general mathematics. It's general education with a major in chemistry and a minor in math. Mm-hmm. But I didn't choose it. It chose me, I guess.
Was that the quickest way for you to get out?
In other words, I really wanted to be a med tech. Oh, okay. Because at that time, Nazareth had a med tech school, but I would have to have gone 5 years. And I said, no, I want to finish in 4 years. And so, but when I graduated from Nazareth, there were no jobs in Louisville for African-American women. So my first job was as a clerk typist. I applied for a civil service job. And my first job was as a clerk typist in Indianapolis at Fort Benjamin Harrison. Then mm-hmm. I stayed there for a while. And then I worked at several hospitals as a med tech.
So where did you live when you were in Indianapolis? Was
Well,
that the
I lived in, well, my grand I lived with my auntie first on Shriver, and then I lived on 35th Street, but it was all on the north side.
was it segregated in the same way that Louisville was?
Well, it was more or less it was maybe it was more, but and then at that time, Indianapolis more or less ended at 38th Street. You look at Indianapolis now, I just can't really believe it. But when you went to 38th Street, no, it was nothing there really at that time. But some majority of the people in the neighborhoods were African Americans. Yeah.
So, and what was your job like? What you said the med tech, what does that entail?
med tech. Well, that's one. Those are the ones that do all the analytical work in the hospital. That's what a med tech. Now you go out, you draw blood, and you run sugars. You all the lab work. That's what you call a med tech. And I worked at General Hospital there, and then I worked at Methodist Hospital, and then they set up a new hospital called Community, and I worked there, and I helped set up the lab there.
And what drew you to that?
Well, I couldn't find a job. I went into med tech, mainly because that's really what I wanted to be, I thought. And so I did that. And then when I lived there, and I came back here in 58, and I was a med tech at Children's Hospital. And Children's Hospital at that time was where Norton's is now on the Florida and Chestnut. The old Children's Hospital was in that building at that time.
So had did you move back to, in with your mother in the old house, or
Yeah, I
you
moved. I
when
moved.
you
I came back. Yeah, I moved back until I married. I stayed there with my mother. Yeah.
and so had the neighborhood changed in the time that you had been gone?
It hadn't changed that much. No.
So, and were you at this time when you were starting your career, were you also still interested in art?
No, I wasn't interested. No, art wasn't mine. I didn't get interested. No, I didn't really interested. I might have been doing art, but I didn't really take art up until the 70s when my children got grown. No.
Okay. So, what year did, how'd you meet your husband?
Well, we're not gonna talk about him. We're not gonna talk about him. But anyway, but my husband, the father of my youngest child was Ray Allen, and he worked at Brown-Forman, but I didn't know when I applied for that job. Well, people did. I didn't get the job at Brown-Forman because he worked there. I put it like that. But because when I left Children's Hospital, I've also worked at American Synthetic, and I worked at University of Louisville Medical and Dental Research. And when I was there, I met a young lady whose uncle was over the Brown-Forman lab, and she was the one that told me to apply for a job. And then that was in 1966. That's when I went there.
So, were there a lot of African Americans, let alone women, in medicine and the scientific areas you were
Well, the, in the
working in?
well, I worked the doc. I worked for Dr. Felix Bronner, and we did a test. But there was one. I think there was one in the lab where I worked. It was one African American, and everyone else was white. And then the doctor was Jewish. Yeah, but it was a few, but not a whole lot.
So I'd asked her when you got married because I know that you had bought a house once you got married,
Yes.
and I wanted to know about that experience, what it was
Oh,
like, and
okay. Well, before when we got married, we used to live on 39th Street. And we had, and so when we decided to buy a house, and at that time, when you got past 28th Street, it was mainly all white. And when you go down past 34th Street of down, And when people, they were leaving out of the West End, and so we wanted to buy a house, and then they didn't want to sell it to us. So we ended up building a house, which is what is now Algonquin Gardens. And this was once where the fairground was. And my address is Fairland Place. Mm-hmm. And so we built, and this subdivision was built by, except the last four or five houses, Algonquin Gardens was built by James Turner. They were all, and it was built, it, the first homes were built in the mid-50s. Mm-hmm. And that would be a good story for you to find out. Oh, I would like to know the history, because I don't know the history of it all. But it was built in the 50s. I have a distant cousin who is his daughter-in-law. And her name is Devon Turner. Mm-hmm. Devon Duncan Turner, and she might be able to tell you more about that, no, because he also built Alpha Gardens over off of 34th Street.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So he was African American.
Yes. Uh huh. Yeah.
So was the Algonquin Gardens mostly Black families.
It was all Black families. And they were built by the people who lived in them.
Okay.
So we built they all these were we built our house from the ground. In fact, I still have my blueprint. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You said the original house that you wanted to buy, the homeowner didn't want to sell it to you?
No, other words, they were white folks, and you know, they didn't want to sell their house. And so it ended up being better off, because we had the house built. I live in a tri-level, and I still live in the same house that I built.
Okay. You said you and your husband lived on 39th Street before you moved into your
house? Yeah, we were renting a house on 39th Street. Yeah. But then when we wanted, because, you know, then we wanted to buy a house. So we ended up building a house. Mm-hmm. And then, like I say, I think about buying a house today and buying a house then, it's totally different. The cost of a home, I think homes there then was less than $25,000 now. Mm-hmm. And now, and even though this subdivision, the houses now in this area are running around $100,000.
How did you finance your home when you had to build?
We got an FHA loan. Mm-hmm. And it was less than $200 a month. We couldn't hardly pay that sometimes.
So you were working at Brown Foreman then?
Yeah, I was working.
Both of you were at the time?
No, I didn't. When I bought my house, I wasn't working at Brown Foreman.
Your husband was.
I was working at Children's Hospital. I didn't go to Brown Foreman until 66. And I moved in this house in 61.
Yeah. So how was Children's Hospital then?
I just got through. I went last Saturday. I went to Burnham Forest, and this artist from Chicago, Gabriel Moraes, has an exhibition on 10 women, mm-hmm. and there are three of them African-American women, and one of them is Dr. Grace James, and I met Dr. Grace James when she came to Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that, you know, but they were very, you know, and when you think about the hospital and your work, okay, when you think about your hospital and how you meet people, and you don't realize, say, 60 or 80 years later, this person's going to be recognized, you know, for their contributions.
Yeah. Yeah. Was the city still segregated then?
The city is more or less still segregated, as far as I'm concerned. Because, you know, you talk about redlining and this, and as people have progressed, everybody lived in, and then when they got better jobs, they left the West End and they moved to the East End. Mm-hmm. You know?
And how did African Americans feel about this white flight? I mean, when it was going on, did you realize it was happening?
Sometimes you go through stuff and you don't realize what's taking place, you know, or why it's taking place, because the last four houses the house that we live in was built by a white contractor, because evidently there are at least four houses down here that were not built by James Turner. And we live in one of those houses. I don't know if he ran out of money or what, but this Fay, F-E-Y contractor built my house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you were, when you started at Brown-Forman, and you were the first African-American chemist there, were there people that were surprised when you showed up?
Well, you know, I tell people, like I tell people then that I did then, is that I was hired to do a job. And so that we're going to get along, because I was hired for the job that you're doing. But, and so I went in the lab, there were four there, and Brown-Forman at that time was a little Brown-Forman. The only building that was there was between 18th and 20th Street. That was Brown-Forman then in 1960. And you look at it now, it's a worldwide company now, you know, and they just finished publishing their 150th anniversary book. And they have a picture of me in that book. In there, and but there and the lab had four ladies in the lab, and the rest were all men, and I was the only African. And there were at that time no women vice presidents. There were no women in professional positions at Brown-Forman at all at that time.
And what kind of work did you do?
I've always done lab work, analytical work. When I first went there, I analyzed bourbon whiskey is made of corn, rye, and malt. And I analyzed all the raw products. And on any job, you start at the ground level and then you move up. And you talk about computers, although I took my first computer class at U of L in 1962, where you did the teletype. And then I did where you did the punch cards. And then that was all. And then I took a course at Speed, in Fortran. So, but I was introduced to, I've been doing computers since 62. And you sit down and people say, well, you still do. I said, yeah, I do everything I've always done. But they started out with VisiCal, and then you go to Lotus, and then now you have Excel. So I've done all of those.
And so when did you have your first child?
I had my first child in 55.
Okay. So, and how many children do you have?
I have three. They're 60, 65, and 60.
And so were there challenges trying to have this career and also be a mother?
Well, you take things as they come. And when you sit down and think about it, is that I enjoy doing community work. I've always done community work. And because that was the way I was raised up, you know. And I was a Girl Scout back in the 40s in Smoketown at Grace Presbyterian Community Center. And I think I sent you that picture. You have that picture of me.
Yes.
And so, but I've always been involved in community. And in the 60s, you know, but there are just things. I just like community work, and I'm still involved. Even though I have to wear a mask, I'm still involved today. Yeah.
So, and what schools did your children go to?
Oh, they went to Christ the King, and then they went to, my daughter went to Highland Junior High, and she graduated from Atherton. And then my middle child was a slow learner, and he went to that Mattingly School on Newburgh Road. And then my youngest child graduated from Western Elementary High School. Yeah. And then my daughter went on to Kentucky State, and then she went to Eastern and worked on a master's in physical education.
Yeah. So, as a parent, when you're was Christ the King Catholic?
Yes, it was Catholic.
Okay. I wondered how it was different for you being in all Black schools, going to your children's schools, because I assume by then that they were desegregated.
They had it was a mixed school. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they had nuns, white nuns.
Mm. And then they went to public schools.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I had a grandson, and then he went to St. X.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said, you had a child at Atherton. Was that based on your address?
No, that's when you had to catch the bus and go there. You know, it wasn't JCPS didn't provide transportation. Mm-hmm. So she chose to go to Highland Junior High, and then she chose to go to Atherton. You had to apply to go to Atherton, and during those days, you had to pick the courses that your child took.
Mm-hmm.
So you were involved.
You were, and so did any of your children have to deal with busing?
Michael, the youngest child, dealt with busing. But the middle child I took, he went to, like I said, he was a slow learner. So he went to St. John's Church School and all like that. Mm-hmm. And the math, yeah. But he learned how to drive. He learned how to navigate. He's been riding public transportation since he was six. And he's 65 this year, 65. And he's still riding the bus because he doesn't. But he has been able to, I taught him how to read. And how to ride the bus. He reads the newspaper. He'll come up and say, "Mama, so and so and so and so." But I say he reads more. He can tell you more what's going on than some people that have college degrees, because he's very. I taught him how to take care of himself, mm-hmm. and how to be independent.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just wondered if you were involved in any of the controversy around busing, any of those issues.
No, I don't get involved in stuff like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I sit back and watch, but I don't get involved. I sit back and watch.
So what organizations were you a part of? Because you talked about worked in the neighborhood.
I was the president of the Algonquin Neighborhood Association, but I was have been a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority for 70 years, and I'm still active in that. And I'm also involved currently with the West Louisville Women's Collaborative. I was one of the founders of that. And that's a multi-generational, multicultural organization. It's about 14 women. And it's their base course house is at 40th and Garland.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also working with the Fraser Suffrage Committee. And I ran the gallery for Wayside Christian Mission, Wayside Special Gallery, from 2005 to 2017. And when I retired, and they told me they didn't know that volunteers retired, I said, "Yep, I retired." But I'm a perpetual, because I go to school and I like to go to art. And there's a lot of things I'm involved in. It's written down. You know, a lot of things I'm involved in. I forget all the things that I have done.
Well, you said when your kids got older is when you started getting into art. How did that come about? Was that a conscious decision? Or?
Well, in 1977, I took my first ceramic course at Seneca High School, and it was taught by an art therapist. And I still have those first two pieces that I made. One was a thrown little cup, and another one was a frog. I made a frog, and I painted him. And so, but anyway, but just something, you know, realize what all you have done or what are you doing? Because this week, you know, they have a mural on me at Hancock on Jackson Street.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, the Kentucky Center for African American Heritage is doing a Zoom conversation. Did I send you that link?
No, you didn't.
Well, I'll send that to you. Well, anyway, that was something, but I do a lot of things that I don't really realize what I have done.
Mm-hmm.
I also formed an organization called the Kentucky Coalition for African American Arts back in the 80s. And I did that organization for 10 years. And when it dismounted, I gave the money out of the treasury to the Louisville Arts Council. And but we that day, about everything in every group that I'm in, everything is free, and you know, never about charge. Everything is always free. And we had art classes, and also we had with the Kentucky, and also I did two conferences, brought people in, and so I've just done a lot. And sometimes I forget what all I have done.
Well, what inspired you to take that first ceramics class?
Oh, I don't know. I just wanted to be involved and do something with my hands. You know, I had arthritis, and they said if I could use my hands, you know, that would help it. So that's really how I got into ceramics. And then when I took that class, and then I went to mold making, to, you know, where you actually, you know, where they have Christmas trees and everything made and stuff like that. So I took that. I took years of that. And then they said, so then I decided to go to, you heard of Metro Art Center?
Yes.
Run by, well, anyway, I decided to take a class there. So I took a class in ceramics. I took a class in fiber. And the person who was teaching it was a graduate student in the University of Louisville. He was working on his master's. And so I went there, and I did not, and we only had one car. So I had to catch public transportation. So in order to get to class, I would bum a ride with somebody who worked at Brown-Forman, who lived out Dixie Highway, to take me. And then somebody from Metro Arts Center would bring me into where Dunkin' Donuts is, which is where the 18th Street bus started. Mm-hmm. So, but I was, I did that. And then while I was there, another person who was at U of L was there named Laura Ross. And she said, well, why don't you take a class at U of L? Oh, I said, I hadn't thought about that. Well, then I took a class, then I enrolled at U of L, and I'm still enrolled in U of L, and it's 2020. So I was in the class yesterday. So I'm a lifelong learner. But I went, in 2000, I decided to get a degree. And I had to, in order to get a degree in ceramics, I had to take another studio course in fiber, and then I took African American history, and so I got a master's in 2002 from U of L. So I'm still doing ceramics and doing fiber. I have my own studio for my fiber, but I haven't been up there with COVID because it's in Millwood Arts Center, so I haven't gone in any enclosed spaces.
You said your mom's house burned down. When that happened?
That happened after 1960, she died there in 66. It happened sometimes in the late 60s or early 70s. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when did you start noticing that the West End was changing?
Well, in other words, when people started building, moving, like when you think about Southwestern Parkway, you remember all the, you know, Dr. Robinson and L.T. Duncan, who was my cousin, who was with the Mammoth Life Insurance Company. All the African Americans were building on Western Parkway between Broadway and Winrose Way. You know, that's where Roscoe Bryant, who was a doctor, and there's a lot of doctors and lawyers were building there, and I think it looked like in me, it might have started from there and moved up. But that I remember those homes there, down there.
But were you around for urban renewal?
I remember that, when they tore down Walnut Street. Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. And what was the feeling in the community then, in the African-American community, when that was going on?
You know, it was something because, you know, you say the theaters were there. And that time you had, at six and Walnut Street, you had the Mammoth Life Insurance Company on the right-hand side, and then you had the Domestic Insurance Company on the left-hand side, and you had the Grand on the left, and you had the Lyric on the right, and it was all, and then you had the Empire Taxicab was on that block, but they were all, then when you walked down one, you had all Black businesses, you know, like the Kings had a fish place, And but you were able to walk, and I've walked Warner Street all my life. And you never, and I never was afraid to walk, because my mother said, always speak to people and pat a dog on the head. And so I'm still speaking to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So was Beecher Terrace there when you were growing up?
Beecher Terrace came up. They came up in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I had cousins. I had relatives who lived in Beecher Terrace. And a lot of things and a lot of activities took place at Baxter Community Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it wasn't a place you were afraid to go, or
I wasn't afraid to go.
What kind of people live there? You said you had family there.
Well, it was regular people that lived there mm-hmm. then, and you didn't have Section 8 at that time. I think that is. I think Section 8 has caused a lot of places to go down. Yeah, but there you had people, who actually, majority. If you ask anybody, you talk to Kevin Fields at Louisville Central Community Center, which I volunteer. I'm a committee member there. He'll tell you he grew up in. So a lot of people will say this is where they got their start. I remember when Shepherd Square was built, because at that time people were living in alleys. And when you sat down and I can talk about my grandmother didn't have hot and cold running water. She didn't have a toilet. But this is the way I grew up. So I can identify with people.
Where'd your grandmother live?
611 East Spencer. That is the only house. Oh, yeah. That is one of four houses that are still remaining on that block. Mm-hmm. And when the young man, the artist that was doing the mural on me on Jackson Street, we went over and I stood on that front porch and he took a picture of me on that porch. And the people that were renovating me wanted me to go inside. And I said, no, I want to remember it as it was when I grew up. Because we took a bath in a tin tub. And you had an outhouse. You raised chickens in the backyard. She raised chickens in the turkeys in the garage, And my best girlfriend, we played together, and we ended up working at Brown Foreman together. Her name was Loretta Eves. Her name was ended up being Loretta Manson. And on that mural, she's the one that's pictured with me on that mural on Jackson Street.
So was your grandmother from Louisville?
She was from Lebanon, Kentucky.
Okay.
Lebanon, Kentucky. She was more or less a housewife, and my grandfather worked at a cooperage. A cooperage was out somewhere. I forget the name of the cooperage, but he worked at a cooperage.
Mm-hmm. So when did you realize that like the projects and all that, the Beecher Terrace were as when you grew up.
Well, when you think about it, when I grew up, there were alleys and people lived in alleys. Mm-hmm. That were their permanent homes. And then people had newspaper for wallpaper. They didn't have wallpaper. They had newspaper for wallpaper. And they had outhouses. So you sit down and think when they built the projects, you had hot and cold running water, you had a bathroom, you had a kitchen, and you had your bedroom. So it was an improvement.
Yeah,
it was perfect. Well, now, and as it's gotten old, as it aged, it went down because people took advantage, because once people got, my girlfriend, I'm talking about Loretta Manson, her and her husband lived there. And then they built a house on Warner Street, 29th and Warner. So as people stayed there and they saved money, then they moved out of the project and they moved into their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about Nazareth, because I know a lot of your classmates there were also accomplished African-American women. I know Catherine Higgins, who's...
Yes.
Mother was one of your classmates. I think her name was Eleonora.
Uh-huh. Well, also talking about that, well, the first Nazareth was the first school in Kentucky that integrated. Mm-hmm. And last four years ago, I helped establish a scholarship for the first two African-Americans. And the scholarship is called the Patricia Lauderdale Barbara Miller Endowed Scholarship. And it's for African-American women. Yeah. And so it's now totally endowed now. But when I went there, they graduated in 51. I graduated in 53. But when I went there, everybody in your class was white. You didn't, have, you know. And I remember going, we went to class. Oh, also I was a secretary when we graduated, and we wanted to have a party. And the only place that we could have a party was at the Knights of Columbus, because everything was segregated back in 1953, mm-hmm. you know. So things, you know, so there's a lot of things that I've gone through, and I forget what all I have gone through it, or that I have experienced.
So what was your relationship with your white classmates at Nazareth?
Oh, well, we got along, you know. I get along with everybody, mm-hmm. you know, and some of us, you know, and most of my friends, people that I knew, most of them are dead now, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we went somewhere and we stopped to eat, and they wouldn't feed me, and I was in the car with them, so nobody ate, so we went on, then we came on back to Louisville. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you socialized with them and
yeah,
I did different things. And so I wanted to ask you about, you talked about all the arts organizations that you were part of, and yeah. that all came from your interest in taking that ceramics class.
Yeah, they all, everything, yeah. yeah.
So yeah, what was your first art group that you became part of?
I guess the very first group that I became part of was the Kentucky Coalition of Afro American Artists, and that was in 81. And you remember when Ken Clay had Renaissance Arts? You remember mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he had a conference at I forget where it was. Was it the Garden? But anyway, this organization was founded after that conference, and it was statewide, and That was the very first, and then I just been involved with things after that, and being in that organization, I became involved with the Kentucky Arts Council and places like that.
What kind of programs would you do with the King Clay organization? Statewide.
The statewide was Kentucky Coalition African American Arts.
Okay.
But in other words, it started because I attended the conference, and then I met other people. Priscilla Cuffer, who now lives in Birmingham, she was one of the people, and Donna Morton, who now lives in Cincinnati, and then Bernard Young, who's a PhD, lived in Lexington, and I forget the other fellow's name. But anyway, that was the beginning of the Kentucky Coalition. But anyway, we taught free art classes at the YMCA, it used to be a West End Y. No, downtown, and at the Shawnee Community Center. But that's who, no. And then I would bring artists in to teach classes. And then there was also drum making. And if you talk to Ed White, he will say that he got influenced by the drum making class that was taught for my organization.
So you talked about the Y. Did you go to the West End Y, or? How are your brother? Was it
Melson? I went to the Chester Street Y, and then I've been on the board there at Chester Street Y, and then there was they had the women's Y down. It was at 44th and Broadway. Then I went there. My daughter went there for things. So, mm-hmm. but I've been in going places for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And so when did you get serious about art? Like say that, you know, you considered yourself an artist, that this was something you were seriously going to pursue.
Well, I decided to get my master's, mm-hmm. you know, I did that.
And is it mostly ceramic? Because I know you've done other fiber art too.
Yeah. In other words, in order to get my master's, I had to take fiber. Mm-hmm. But I really fiber. In other words, I had to do ceramics in a studio. And fiber, you can take it. You can get on a bus or a plane, and you can still stitch. And so it's something you can do anywhere. But I haven't done it because after you get a design, in order to design a piece, you need a lot of space to lay it out. So that's where I do all my design. I have a studio at Melwood Art Center, and that's where I really do all my dyeing and do my designing in there up there.
So do you see a connection between your scientific career and your artwork?
Yes, documentation. I write everything down that I do. Yeah, I have books and books and books. And I think it's important if you want to go back, and everything that I'm probably talking to you about, I got it written down somewhere. But it's important for you to go back to be able to realize, in other words, analytically, when you're a scientist, you have to write everything down that you do. So that carries over to everything that I do now.
I forgot what I was going to ask you for a minute.
Okay.
When did you retire from Brown-Forman?
I retired in 97 from Brown-Forman. And when I retired, they wanted to know, what did I want them to do for me? So I told them I wanted to have an art exhibit. So my first art exhibit, my major art exhibit in ceramics, was done at Portland Museum when I retired in February of 1997. And because of that exhibition, have you seen the book called Kentucky Women?
Yes.
Well, anyway, the lady who wrote that book, Eugenia Potter, I'm in that book because of that exhibition. Mm-hmm. And we're still, she emails me still, and this was in 97. Mm-hmm. And we're also members of the Fraser Women's Suffrage Committee. So mm-hmm. we still email each other. And I'm in five publications. Mm-hmm. That one, I'm in the Kentucky African American Encyclopedia. I'm in 100 Fascinating Women. I'm in Portraits of Grace and the 150th Anniversary Book by Brown-Forman. Those are all publications that I'm in. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'm in other magazines and stuff like that.
So was it a strange transition for you to become so celebrated? Like, how do you explain?
I'm still the same. I'm still
adoration.
In August, my birthday, and I received a call. A lady sent me an email congratulating me for something, and I didn't know why she was calling me, because I did not know that I was one of the 10 Kentucky women of the century. Hmm. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Well, I'll send you that. But anyway, so it was published. I'll send it to you. But anyway, she called me, and I was just stunned, because what I do are do the things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I give. I haven't worked one day, and I don't make art. If I sell something, okay. But my intention for making art is for people to enjoy it, you know, and for people to come in and see it. You know, I'm not worrying about it, because I haven't worked one day since I retired. And I just enjoy meeting people, and I enjoy going to openings, and I just enjoy people, and I enjoy talking to people. And this past week, last week, do you know about that exhibit that's at Fort Burnham Forest?
No, I don't.
Well, anyway, a Jewish lady out of Chicago was given a grant to do 10 Kentucky women. Mm-hmm. And she did 10 women. She did 3 white women, 3 Jewish women, 3 African-American women, and one and one Native American woman. And the three African American women were Dr. Grace James, Wilma Brown, and Alice Dunnigan. Those were. I'll send you that.
So are these portraits?
Well, these are banners. They're hanging.
No.
They're hanging. Let me tell you. They're hanging. I'll send you all that information. Send me an email. What am I supposed to send you?
Okay.
They are banners. In other words, they're made out of, the lady made them. They're woodblock prints. And then the Bernheim had them printed on polyester and encased. And they're now hanging in the forest. And they're hanging in the forest around Lake Nevin. And that lake is 1 mile round. And I walked that lake on Saturday. And I took a picture of every banner that was all 10 women. I took a banner of one. And one of the women is Susie Post. Did you ever know Susie Post?
Yes, I did.
Well, anyway, I was with Susie Post 2 days before she died. We went to dinner at this pizza place on Fairfax Avenue. And then I left to go to Florida the next day. And then she died the day after I got to Florida. Well, anyway, she's one of the women that's there. And I'm gonna send you a picture of the group, because the group, there are seven. So the artist, who is a Jewish woman, wanted to meet African-American women so that she could show, so she could talk about what she did and why she chose them. And so I got seven women together and we went Saturday, and I got a group picture of all of us there at there. Mm-hmm. And, but you know, but you know, it's just nice for her. And tell you how I met her was through Filson Club. I donate some things to the Filson Historical Society. And I had sent some things to archives, and the lady who was a Jewish lady there is doing archives on Jews. And so she was telling me that this artist had done these works. And so I said, I would like to meet her. So she said, okay, I'll call you when she comes. So I said, okay. So anyway, she came in October, and I met her. And we talked, and she emailed me. And so she said that she wanted to talk about experiences that she had, because she came from Israel to the United States, and you know, and all the troubles that she's gone through. And so it was very interesting, because one person who was on the tour was Madeline Hicks. Madeline Hicks, she's a dentist. You know her?
No, I don't.
And her maiden name was Maupin. Her daddy was Milburn Maupin. Well, anyway, she has been to 10 countries overseas, and she has been to Israel, and she was able to talk to this lady about the things that she saw. And so it was very interesting, and the lady ended up complimenting me for inviting these people. And one lady, you know, there's a Grace M. James Academy here. So the lady from there, Melanie Page, she went on the tour. So I'll send you that information.
Okay.
But you never know who you know that knows somebody, and then you get to meet them, you know. But that was just by accident.
You had talked about the Jewish families that were in the neighborhood when you were young and babysitting for them. And so as the neighborhood changed, did those families leave too, stores close?
Oh, well, see, well, that whole name, nothing is there that was there. There's no grocery stores there now. Mm-hmm. The church owns that whole property at the northeast corner. And then on the other corner at 18th, at the west southwest corner, it's a dry cleaning company now. Mm-hmm. And then at 16th and Chestnut, that doing urban renewal, they tore all those houses down on, you know, and on that side of the street, you know, and that's where, I forget the name of that project that's there now. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you were part of a West Louisville Women's Collective.
Yeah.
And how'd that come about?
How it came about? Well, it came about because, well, we met, it was eight, it was five or six, five, four or five of us. And there was a grant that we wanted to apply for called Lots of Possibility Grant. And so we applied for that. And so we were awarded $4,000 for that. So after that, we became a LLC, and then we became a 501c3. So
who are some of the other people involved with you in that? Who were some of the other people involved in that with you?
Ramona Lindsay, who is with the Community Foundation for Louisville now. That's maybe only one you know, but this down. www.wlc4art.com.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you'll be able to see all the. We have a picture of everybody that's in that group.
And what year was that you started?
That was in 2014.
Okay. And so you got together and you had to become a nonprofit to grant.
We ended up becoming a nonprofit, but we built, you know, there's a Lambrick. We built the Lambrick with that $4,000. We built the Lambrick at 3831 on Hale.
Okay. And what's the Lambrick?
Well, I'll send you a picture of that too.
Okay.
But in other words, this was created. It was created by Beth Haven, and it's there eight. There were eight. There are five big circles, and what we did, we bought blocks, and we went around and we went to different organizations, and we had people to write paint on bricks, and these bricks make up the Lambrick. You need to go by there and see it. But anyway, it's better when in the summertime when because now it's but I'll send you a picture of that. But anyway, we built and so the ladies built that, and we had community help. All the people in the community did that, and the Dismas House helped us, but we had to tear down trees and stuff. But they own that property at 3831 Hale.
Mm-hmm. And why did you pick that area? Did you want to, the group want to invest
we'll go back even further. Okay, we'll go from there. Other words, that block between 38th and 40th Street, there is a church on the corner of 38th and Hale, and then there's a church on the corner of 40th and Hale. But in between there was an old house that's 3835 Hale, and I bought that house, and I rented to this. I've renovated this house, and this organization rents this house for $1 for $12 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so,
you have to ride by there.
Yeah. So did you buy the house? What condition was it in?
I had it totally renovated. It's paid for. Paid cash for it. There's no loan or nothing. There's no lien on that house. It's totally. It's Elmer Lucille Allen, and they call the house an ELA house. But if you go on the website, you'll see it.
Yeah, yeah. How much did you pay for the house?
I think it was $10,000 or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so did you pick that house just because of the? Price, or did you want to bring something to that block?
I picked the house because it was a place that the ladies could have a meeting, because it's all in the same block.
Mm-hmm.
Since the house is 3835, and the Lambrick is 3831.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had to renovate it, gut it down to the, took it down to the, took everything. I'll send you, in fact, if you go to the website, if you go to the property valuation, they have the original house still on there. Yes.
So, that's all the questions I had. Is there something I didn't ask you about, or something specifically to housing that you'd
like to say? What is so funny people are, you know, I actually own four houses. I own my house, I own the house my grandson lives in, and I own another house. So I own three houses in Algonquin Gardens. I have a mortgage on one my grandson lives in, but the rest of them are free and clear.
Mm-hmm. And you pay them off, or were you able to buy them for?
In fact, one, my son lived in one, and his rent paid for that one. I own four houses. Yeah. And like I said, I haven't worked at all since then. And I sell very little art. So everything I do, I'm always giving.
Are all your houses in West Louisville?
They in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Yes. I can look out of my, I can go walk around the corner to my grandson's house. And they're all in Algonquin. The three houses are in Algonquin Gardens.
Mm-hmm. And so why do you think you've never left the area, or is there something about that area
why move? Why, in other words, I couldn't, where I live now, I couldn't buy this house for what I paid for it. Mm-hmm. And now houses down here. In fact, my grandson's house, I think I paid less than $60,000, and now it's over $100,000.
Hmm.
So prices of houses are going up down here.
Hmm. Why do you think that is?
Property valuations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you think a lot of the revitalization efforts that are going on are playing a role in it?
Well, actually, I think I would like to see more African Americans invest in the West End versus white folks coming in buying up all the property.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, I want it to be integrated, but I think the African Americans, they need to invest. African Americans need to invest in property, period. Mm-hmm. They need to own. You need to own where you live. And if you don't own anything, you don't have a voice.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that's one of the problems that happened in the West End is the lack of home ownership?
I look at all the vacant lots on Muhammad Ali right there between 22nd and 24th Street. And all these houses years ago, African Americans lived in, and now most of them are torn down. Mm-hmm. But I see they're renovating the one right there on the corner of the alley. I take a 23rd and Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Did you get enough?
I think we did.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you asked me to be on. Like I said, but send me an email of what I told you I was going to send you, because I forget. And then I'll send them to you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.